we are back. We are coming towards the end of the Baseball Prospectus Prospect Podcast series here on the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. But we're not quite done yet. And to get one of those out of the way today, the Milwaukee Brewers, I have Jeffrey Panadosha with me once again. And Jeffrey, I asked ChatGPT about the current state of the Brewers farm system. And it said succinctly, it's a mixed bag. And that sounds pretty spot on.
I welcome our AI prospect overlords.
Yes. We will be including ChatGPT in all prospect rankings in the future. I think is the way we
I did wonder how you could, because obviously there's been a lot of chat lately about, and no pun intended, replacing reporters and whatnot with some sort of AI language bot algorithm.
There's nothing that could go wrong there.
What you would have to feed into it to replace me at Baseball Prospectus. And it was just like the entire over of like Seijun Suzuki and probably like some Kierkegaard or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. At least it's not giving us some weird responses. Like I think it was Bing's AI that was doing some weird stuff. So, I mean, it pretty much summed up the Brewers, right? It's a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag, yeah.
You know, it's a talented team, and they play in the right division, right?
They do.
They have basically one team they have to beat. Yeah. And, hey, maybe the Cardinals suck this year. Maybe Adam Wainwright's arm falls off. You know, maybe Miles Michaelis isn't so lucky anymore.
As a right? man like Adam Wainwright in his 40s, a lot of things can go wrong.
that is true. Now, they do have an upgraded catcher, the Cardinals do, so that would be a bit
they
more
do.
Difficult,
and,
right?
They do, and Jordan Walker and Mason Wynn and maybe Gordon Graceffo.
Yeah,
around the corner at some point. Yeah,
they have some prospects in the minors, but going back to the Brewers, it's not a deep farm system, right? But I think there are some guys that can contribute to the major league team this year in a way that maybe not quite to the extent that the Cardinals have in the upper minors in terms of depth, but they've got some guys that can contribute this year. And then at the top, they've got one guy that is the ultimate wild card, I think, in minor league baseball.
Yeah.
So. It's just talking about the overall state of the farm system, I would say it's probably hovering between, let's call it, the 14 to 16, 17 range.
Middle of the pack is fine.
Yeah,
yes.
I think middle of the pack is the best way to describe it. It's interesting because I think, like, they don't have a lot of guys that you look at and you say, all right, they're going to be really good players. But there are a lot of high variance prospects in this farm system that could go and break one way or the other.
I think that's fair. It's like a little bit deeper than it's been in the past, a little bit better at the top than it's been in the past.
Yeah.
For most of my tenure at Baseball Prospectus, it's been a bottom 10 farm system. Really anything after the Christian Yelich trade, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is exactly. Sort of the dividing point there. And look, they've consistently. And this is kind of like a thing that the Giants did for a while, too, like a little bit before my tenure at Baseball Prospectus and maybe the beginning of my tenure at Baseball Prospectus, where they get a little bit more out of their prospects than you'd think. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at the 2022 team, which obviously wasn't great, but was a above average team. Like even internally, so not going into like the Willy Adames, Christian Yelich, Rowdy Tellez type trades, and Luis Arias on level two. Like, Corbin Burnes, I think, made a 101 for us, but Corbin Burnes also made the part of the 101 where you're not a top of the rotation. Yeah.
That's true.
Eric Lauer is probably a little bit better than his prospect status. Brandon Woodruff certainly is. Josh Hader, who they traded but was there for part of the season. They got a lot out of Josh Hader. I said before that I think our Josh Hader rankings, I don't know how many I actually did, was basically right, or were basically right. Devin Williams certainly probably overperformed a little bit. It's harder to find guys on the position player side. Like, Keston Hiura is probably a little bit disappointing.
Oh, I think he is disappointing at this point. I mean,
Luis Arias has had a very weird career. Like, he's a nice player, but he's had a very weird career.
Yeah. Tyrone Taylor was at one point a pretty big prospect.
Sure. I know, obviously, they've been, this is a very, you know, under Stearns, this is a very active team in terms of trading, you know, prospect for prospect or buy trades or, you know, pre-arb trades. So they are kind of like the Rays in that respect, where they, if they do think they have a 53% advantage on their model, they're going to push trades there. And you can look at like the Trent Grisham trade, right? For Urias and Lauer, and I don't know how that's going to play out long term. It looked in the immediate term like the Padres clearly got the better of that deal. Now it's a little bit
I think you might lean
less
Brewers at
clear.
this
You
point.
might, yeah. So these things have to play out, but they are able to generally, generally speaking, they are able to get a little bit more out of their system than a strict org ranking analysis might say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that kind of goes back into them being. And it's funny because, like, I think when you think of them as like a player development, there's nothing that really stands out, but it's more of a major league development, which is interesting, right? Because there's a difference between
So
having
it's a,
development in the minor leagues versus the major leagues.
I think it's a player acquisition model more than anything else, right?
Yeah.
So we'll get into some of these guys, but like the Sal Frelick pick, I think is probably a good example of that. I mean, the Jacob Mizorowski pick is going to be the
Oh,
premier
yeah.
example of this when we get to it, but
Oh, yeah.
they are going to target certain types of players in the draft that. And again, I don't do a ton of amateur coverage, but I pay attention to it. And the Brewers tend to take weird picks, right? As whatever the orthodoxy would be at that point in the draft.
Yes.
And I feel like they've gotten probably better than average results out of it, all in all.
Yeah. I would say so. I think they have. And they have not necessarily been drafting towards the top of
No, I mean,
drafts in
they've
recent
been,
years, and
again.
they're not a big market. So I think given that they are they do have like this guardian ray, but not to quite the extent of them, but they kind of have that energy where they find ways to be competitive, to manage a relatively small payroll. And to, you know, put out a farm system that, you know, has several pretty intriguing guys, right? They kind
Right,
of have that
they have
vibe.
like a type, right? So
They
you look
do.
at their 2022 roster. Smith, do you know how many players with over 150 plate appearances on the 2022 Brewers hit 260?
Oh, God. I'm gonna say, I feel like this is a trick question. I'm gonna say zero.
It is zero, is the answer.
Ah, okay. There we
And they
go.
were 105 OPS plus as a team. They hit 235, 315, 409.
Yeah.
But you got guys like, Hunter Renfroe, the aforementioned Tyrone Taylor, who like hit 233, 286, 442. Doesn't sound good. A little bit better than league average in the 2022 run environment. Luis Urias, who was absolutely a hit over power middle infield prospect, has now a couple seasons of hitting in this general range of 239, 335, 404. So it's a very weird, like Keston, we said Keston Hira has not been great. Keston Hira has not been great. Keston Hira for his career is an above average hitter, hitting 238, 318, 453, which is not the shape of production you would expect it from Keston
No,
Hira coming out of the draft,
not
right?
at all, not at all.
Willy Adames is kind of this power over hit guy. Obviously, Rowdy Tellez and
Yeah.
is the premier example of this. A very extreme, Christian Walker-esque power over hit profile. But and they did this with Colton Wong, who's obviously not there anymore. But they are
Right.
capable of taking these like 55 hit players and just turning them into power over hit 750 OPS guys, which, in that ballpark is not the worst strategy in the world, I
No,
guess.
it's not. It's not. And they're going to take gambles on guys like that. They're going to take gambles on guys who have been very good in the past, but have some sticky skill sets. Like Andrew McCutchen comes to mind, right? you know, guy that has a skill set that could probably play into his mid-30s, and guess what? It has, right?
Look, they got a very good season out of Hunter Renfro and then flipped him for a series of prospects that I wouldn't have flipped them for, but...
A lot of junk in there.
I guess we'll see how it plays out, yeah.
We will. But actually getting into the farm system here, so Jackson Churio is... He's not an enigma because we know what he did, but he's
fascinating.
He's the most he's fascinating. He's the most divisive. It stirs up probably the biggest debate amongst scouts and analysts, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
He could be either incredible in a couple of years, and in that conversation, we're one of the best players in baseball, or he could be a guy that's a quad A player, and there's. You could absolutely see a scenario for both those outcomes.
So there's, I struggled with Churio badly in terms of where to put him on like a one-on-one context, right? So I think there's three different paths you can take here as an evaluator. So I'm not going to say this is surface level. I'm just going to take the three different paths as they go. So the first one is, if you look at his age relative to league performance, and we'll drill down because you have to as a evaluator, but if you just look at his age relative to league performance, I think you can make a case he's the best prospect in baseball, right?
Yep.
He was 18. He signed in January of 2021, to be clear. And look, we flagged him last year out of the Dominican Summer League as having good TrackMan data, and he had a very good top-line statistical performance in the 17-year-old Dominican Summer League. Whatever. He crushed extended, went to A-ball for 2 months as an 18-year-old, hit 324, 373, 600. And, like, look, I will tell you, my... philosophy is the lead prospect writer of Baseball Prospectus, which job I've had for seven list cycles now, however many list cycles it's been, is that statistical performance, whether good or bad, exists to be explained. It's very difficult to come up with an explanation for 324, 373, 600 that isn't, oh, this is one of the best prospects in baseball.
Yeah. There is one... part
if
of
he
this.
Had just spent the whole year at the Carolina League as an 18-year-old and hit that, maybe he'd be a little bit higher. I don't know. That's probably not fair. Obviously, he went to high A and was fine, although the K rate ticked up, again, as an 18-year-old in high A. And then he went to double A for a week and didn't hit.
Yeah. And so this does bring up the question, and we've talked about this, and maybe not directly. We've kind of walked around it, right? But the quality of low A pitchers is significantly worse than it has been in years past.
324, right? 373, 600.
I know.
I don't care at that point. So that's the first line of discourse, right? So the second line is going to be, how are the scouting reports? And, you know, Ben Spinier saw him and thought he was pretty good. Not 973 OPS good, but who is?
Right.
And saw a lot of the things when we get to the third level will bear out, but again, like, how do you identify, how do you evaluate an 18-year-old at that level? Like, what does he do well? Hits the ball pretty hard. He's a pretty good athlete. Runs well. Good shot to stick in center. We're taking off a lot of boxes for top prospect here. Then you, and like, it looks right? If you look at the swing, it looks right. He's out in front, good.
Mm-hmm.
Barrel control, drives the ball, etc. And you get to like the underlying stuff from those levels. And then it's like, okay, it's not great zone contact. It's not elite exit velocity. The chase is all right.
It's fine, but like...
It's fine, but like, he was 18.
Yeah.
Like, this is such an outlier profile that it's difficult to be like he should improve these things just in the course of normal baseball human events. But then you can also roll it back further and be like, he's listed at 6'1", 165. That's probably pretty close to what he is. It's not a ton of physical projection. You know, what is this going to look like in 3 years? I don't know.
Yeah.
Would I be shocked if he's just preternaturally talented in a way that he's the number one prospect at midseason? I wouldn't. Would I be shocked if he's just like a roll five center fielder in 4 years? I wouldn't.
Right.
Again, we're going to kind of bet on the upside, and we have kind of bet on the upside here. Maybe not as much as other places, which, fine. This is a free roll to me in a lot of ways.
We just don't have enough information yet, is the answer. And It's not that, like, he didn't have a full season's worth of PAs, because, like, he did. But, well, not
he did,
even that,
and he was
but,
very
like,
good
he was
at
healthy.
Them.
He's, yeah.
He was healthy. He was very, everything, you know.
It's been basically one season in stateside ball.
He's going to start back in Biloxi next year as a 19-year-old.
I know.
And, like, yeah.
It's one of those profiles. There's someone else.
There's no way to
about.
Middle this, right?
As yeah, a, no, there isn't. There isn't.
There's no way to middle this, yeah.
Yeah. We just don't have enough information. And, you know, I think this is where I'm going to lean on some of the TrackMan data, on some of the, you know, actual in-person scouting that Ben did, for instance, right? If it doesn't look like just a mega superstar in the way that, like, the Acuñas or the Tatises came out, like, I'm going to be a little bit lower, even if the numbers are that incredible.
Yeah, again, this is a wild thing to say about an 18-year-old position prospect. Like, I think he's a fairly high probability above average regular, but I don't know if he's a superstar.
Right. Like, everything looks good, but it's not the Acuña, Tatis, even Soto in his last, you know,
sure,
few months before he became
a
major leaguer.
6 weeks or whatever it was.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't, this is not that kind of, my God, like, this guy's going to be an MVP. Mm-hmm. So I want to edge on the side of caution here. I want to just give a fair warning to all of you out there who might be trying to get him in your dynasty leagues. By all means, do it, but don't.
He's not available in your dynasty league at this point, but yeah.
Yeah, but say he was, don't go out of your way to price him in the Acuña, Tatis, because I've seen it happen already a few times. Just don't do it. Wait for some more reports to come out that we will give you guys. Wait for some of the other metrics to come in as the season rolls on. But be excited, but don't go completely in yet, I think is what this ranking of him within the 101 really tells you. For all the volatility that Churio brings, I think Sal Frelick brings a floor, right? A certainty, if you will, in a way that we might see him. In fact, I'd be a little surprised if we don't see him in the major leagues in 2023. And heck, maybe he even makes the opening day roster at this point.
So Frelick's a funny one for me, because obviously as a Mets fan and occasional Mets pundit, he was tied pretty heavily to them in the 2021 draft class, to the point people were saying, like, oh, they have a pre-draft agreement, yada, yada, yada. And I don't know if they did or they didn't. What I do know is the Mets picked Kumar Rocker in that spot. And hindsight being what it is, 2020, as the people say,
mm-hmm,
it does turn out that, you know, man, Sal Frelick's a pretty good prospect now. And, like, you look at him as a college guy, like, you know, BC, AC, good conference, the cold weather guy.
But Jeffrey, yeah, Kumar Rocker went third overall the following year.
I'm aware of where he got picked. I was not on that podcast, but I'm aware of where he got picked and where he got ranked.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if this would have happened in the Mets system too, right? Like, it's, he's never going to hit for a ton of power, but there's a little pull side pop there, right? You're not going to challenge him willy-nilly as an upper minors or major league pitcher. He's going to get on base. He's going to hit for average. He's a pretty good center fielder at this point. Maybe not ideal, but he can probably play there for you. And it's just, you know, it's going to, I don't know if it's going to be kind of like weirdly what you would have hoped Austin Martin would be in that spot, where it's something like 270, yeah. 390, 420 or something like that.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And he can hit. I think they're going to get a fair bit out of him on both sides of the ball, too, with like their positioning and things like that. Like, again, this is like kind of like the consistent year in, year out, 3 to 4 win player. But you know, the 15th overall pick, like, yeah, I'd probably rather have that than the punted slot money for Kumar Rocker, I guess. They did okay with that, too, but.
Yeah, they're lucky to have.
Yes, I mean, has impressed me more as a pro than I expected. Like, it's not shocking that he would have been a back end 101 guy, which he was even coming into the season. But I think his 2022 season is, if not a like super big breakout, a consolidation of his above average major league skills.
365, 435, 508 was the slash line. AAA Nashville. Again,
yeah, he's thinking of 365. PCL, but dude can hit.
He can hit. I think, like, and again, like, we're not, stats are, at least in the minor leagues, are meant to be explained, right? But, like, the observation is very simple.
Look, if it's an extra 50 points of BABIP, sure. It's fine. Exactly. But that's the general shape of the production you're going to get.
Yeah, and it's been consistent now for a couple of years, you know. So what Churio lacks in that track record, we have with Frelich, and we're pretty certain he's a plus hitter at this point. So, you know, obviously a nice guy, and I've had the question: is he Stephen Kwan 2.0? I don't hate that. But like, it's stylistically going to be different.
I love it. Yeah. I would actually like.
Would you take Kwan or Frelich at this point?
I kind of hate this comp more in a way, but would you be shocked if he's like Brett Gardner?
Whew. Is he the run that Gardner was, though?
He runs pretty well.
He does.
Is he going to steal almost 50 bases? No, but if he's
I think I would take Gardner, but it's really close.
15-20 guy? I think he's a better batting average guy than Gardner is.
Yeah.
Kind of like unorthodox corner profile is kind of what I'm going for.
I guess it depends like what era of Brett Gardner, because there are like three different eras of Brett Gardner.
Sure.
So
same hairline for all of them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Let's talk about Garrett Mitchell, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of an interesting story, right? Because he's one of those players I think we would have been way higher on in years past, right? Because he's got all the quote-unquote tools, right? And he's got that athletic projection that I would have been a sucker for. But again, as we've talked about with some other prospects on previous podcasts, now that we have like a better idea as to what makes a player produce in the major leagues, I think Mitchell being lower than Frelich and then Churio is a byproduct of that process.
So I think you could make an argument for Mitchell as low as like 6 or 7 on this list if you really wanted to. So the speed and defense floor is going to be the difference for me here, ultimately. And like, hit them all a little harder when he was in the majors. And look, it looks Lane going back again to his college career at UCLA, and I had a lot of conversations with Keenan Lamb, you know, in and around that draft. It's just like, how is it going to play in the pros? And he's basically like, I don't know. And I think even now on, like, almost 3 years later at this point, I don't think that we know.
No.
But there is a floor here, right, where if he's a good defender and center that can run and hit for a little bit of average, like, he's just, again, this is a situation where he's going to play for 10 years.
Yeah.
Where I don't know if you can say that about Joey Weimer or Eric Brown or Tyler Black or Jefferson Cuero at this point. So it is a weird balancing act where we do tend to wait upside. And it's not like Garrett Mitchell does not have upside, right? This is like, could be like a 20-30 center fielder.
Right.
But is he ever going to lift the ball? I don't know. The swing and miss in the majors would worry me. Like, there's a fair bit of collapse risk here too. So, it's one of the ones where it kind of looks right, but it kind of doesn't look right when you dig deeper.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
He's already 24, which is the other weird thing about it, too. Like, yeah. He feels like he's still, like, a projectable. Hey, again, he kind of, like, felt like a high school pick out of UCLA, which is not the, and that's why he went 20 instead of 10, probably.
Yeah, probably. And I think Joey Weimer at number four, like, you could have made the case that, I mean, I probably am of the camp that would take Weimer over Mitchell, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, Tyler certainly is.
Yeah.
I mean, Tyler's been in my ear about him since the Cape Cod League at this point. Like, I get it. Man, again, this is like a corner profile. He's going to have to hit 30 home runs. He still swings and misses in the zone a little bit too much. And Dyke's velocity profile is good. And I just don't, I don't know about the contact rate versus the power. And again, a little bit overage. Like Mitchell, he was drafted in the same draft in 2020. And it's like, I like it. Don't get me wrong, but, and it's like, again, if you told me he just like fit right in the Milwaukee lineup, hitting 250, 330, 480 with the kind of platoon leverage they tend to do, like, yeah, great. And that's nice. And the ranking is probably fine. And the spot on the 101 is probably fine. But those kind of prospects, I do worry a little bit about the collapse risk, and that applies to Mitchell and applies to Weimer too.
Right. But when
once
we
you
rank
get like
them,
215, it gets a little tricky, right?
Yeah, it does. And to be fair, I mean, Weimer, I think, hit, what was it, 243 in double A and then went up to
triple
A.
He did not hit well in double A and then he hit pretty well in triple A.
Yeah.
Again, it's,
yeah. Which, you know, the PCL adjustment there, but
Nashville is in the International League now.
Oh, you know what? That's right. That's right.
It is, yeah.
I am mistaken. Never mind. Here's the way that I look at it, right? If we're talking about OFPs, again, 75th percentile projection.
Yeah.
I think Mitchell would be a slightly above average offensive producer. Mm-hmm. Whereas Weimer, if you're talking about 75th percentile, I think could be comfortably above average offensively. And at that point, it's like,
he's like better Hunter Renfrow than, like, yeah, I could.
I would probably take that over 75th percentile Garrett Mitchell. I think for Garrett Mitchell to hit, it's got to be more like the 85th.
So the thing is,
90th.
Like, yeah, I mean, like 90th percentile Garrett Mitchell is making All-Star games, right? Which I don't know if Weimer is.
Right. Yeah. I think at the 90th, Weimer is definitely capable of that. But I think, like, for me, I'm looking at the 75th percentile outcome for Weimer versus Mitchell, and I'm leaning Weimer at this point. But it's close. Mm-hmm. It is close. At number five, it's not as close. I think there's a little bit of a tier break there with Eric Brown Jr. You know, he was drafted this year. Again, we don't have a whole lot to be going off of in terms of pro looks. He only got 100 plate appearances in low A this year. But, you know, he's an interesting guy, right? He doesn't swing and miss much. He's got a pretty good feel for the strike zone. He's, you know, a pretty rangy guy in the middle infield, but, like, nothing seems like exceptional, right? It's kind of the sum of the parts profile that we've talked about with some other prospects in the past.
He's fascinating to me because I did video work on him, and the swing's bizarre.
It is, yeah.
Which is what it is, you know. It's you make contact or you don't. And I had a terrible video look at him. I remember texting a scout being like, how bad was Eric Brown Jr.'s chase rate this year in the pros? He's like, it was 21% or 22%, I remember. I was like, oh. So I got a bad look. He's like, yeah, maybe. It's like, I don't love him, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And again, it's not, it's just like a dumb swing, right? You watch, like, how does this guy make contact?
Yeah.
And then you look at his actual production. I'm like, yeah, it's Coastal Carolina if you want to be. And the Brewers are absolutely not going to be the guy that's going to say it's Coastal Carolina.
No.
That's not what they do. They don't. They are going to look at his production, and they're going to have a model, and they're going to adjust it, you know, Coastal Carolina versus North Carolina. But, you know, the dude, 1,000 OPS with more walks and strikeouts at Coastal Carolina. And he hit fine in the pros. And, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a ton of power. But, again, he doesn't swing a lot out of the zone.
No.
He does hit the ball in the zone. And it's not, again, it's not like elite offensive tools, but if it's above average offensive tools and he can play shortstop, okay.
Yeah. It's a 55.
It's a 55. There you go, yeah.
It's an above average prospect. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to finish the back end of the top 10 for the Brewers. We'll finish off with Jeffrey's personal cheese ball. We'll be right back. All right, so we are back for the back end of the Brewers top 10 here, and we're going to start with number 6, Tyler Black. But Jeffrey, just in looking at the reports on both Black and, you know, Eric Brown Jr., I think there's a case that, you know, these two could be somewhat interchangeable in how you rank them, right? It probably has to do with the defense as to why Brown's a little higher, but if you want to tell me that Black is ahead of Brown, I would not personally have an issue with that.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. It's kind of a broadly similar offensive profile. Do you think Black, you know, they play Black in outfield a fair bit. Do you think Black can stick in center? I think he's going to bounce around. I think Brown's going to end up bouncing around. I know, obviously I wrote this before Christmas. I do love my OFP for this, I have to say. I don't normally victory lap it. What you imagine a 1980s number two hitter was, even though it was usually like Willie McGee. I like William McGee. William McGee was one of my favorite players as a kid. So, yeah. But, yeah. Look, if he's William McGee, this is going to come out a little low, right? Like,
yeah.
William McGee had a... I feel like, intellectually, that should be a... like a 30-war career or something like that?
Yeah.
Let's see. 34. There you go. 34.2.
That's good, a solid career. 295, 333,
396 hitter. Exactly league average by OPS plus.
I think that would be just fine for Tyler Black, honestly.
I think he has a little more power than Wayne McGee, who topped out at 11 home runs.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing about Black is that, you know, it's a similar skill set to Brown and to Eric Brown Jr., but he does not chase. He makes pretty good contact in the zone. And he's not like a guy that's just going to hit a bunch of, you know, soft hit singles into right field, right? Like, he's not going to punish the ball, but, like, he should have gap-to-gap power. Because you look at the swing, and, like, Tyler Black is just that kind of player that I gravitate to, where there's this intensity in the batter's box. And he seems to just have an exceptional knowledge of the strike zone. And, you know, for teams that are able to develop.
Yeah, those guys always, like, and this applies to Eric Brown Jr., too. Like, you need to see it in double A, right?
You absolutely do.
That's the difference, right?
281, 406, 424, and 283 high A plate appearances this year for
you want to see that double A. That's
you do
profile, yeah.
You do. And I mean, we did see it in the Fall League, which, again, take that for what you will, but, you know, he looked good there. So you're just talking about one of those athletic, fast guys that can get on base a lot. And listen, I mean, any additional power that comes from the profile is going to be, you know, interesting. But again, you know, the ultimate question I think we have about Black is how much power will there be in game? Yeah. And then, you know, will he stick in center? Because I think I think we've closed the door on him being a second baseman at this point, right? Like he did not look
right. They good. Played him a fair bit in the outfield by the time Fall Ball ran around. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking he can't play. Like this is the the Willie Harris, Eric Young Jr. second baseman, right? He can play there for you once a week.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think so. Kind of like in the Chris. Well, Chris Taylor's actually a little bit of a better second baseman than that defensively,
yeah,
but
and maybe not at this point. But yeah, at some point, yeah.
You know, 3 years.
Yeah, ago, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So Jefferson Cuero is at number 7 here on this list, and he's just one of those other young guys that, granted, was signed a couple of years before Churio, but is almost as young, right? He just continues to chug along, right?
Yeah, I had a scout ask me where we had Jefferson Cuero on the 101. I had to be like, well, we don't. He's like, well, you should. I'm like, great. Thanks for telling me that after we locked the 101. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he hits the ball hard, right? And he's got good bat speed.
Yeah, I mean, basically the quote I got was like, he showed me everything I wanted out of a catching prospect, which fair enough, he does, right?
Yeah, I absolutely think he does. You know, one of the questions I have for you is defensively. You know, do you think that this is the kind of defensive profile behind the plate that will stick?
I think it is. Like, you still need to see him do it over the course of a full season. But yeah, I think he is a catching prospect in the way that we talk about catching prospects, like actual catching prospects. I joke in the actually, I don't joke. Jesse does in the fantasy take that he's not even the best catching prospect named Cuero. And that's true in a way he isn't, but also I think he's a better defender than Edgar is. So,
well, in that scenario, I would actually say that yes, he is the best catcher named Cuero because
he's the best catcher named Cuero.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, listen, he barrels the ball at a decent rate. He's got good bat speed. You know, the aggressiveness, I think, is one thing that will have to be toned down. But I think, as we've mentioned with some other players, there's a difference between aggressiveness and a pitch recognition issue.
Yeah. He had a very good season between 2A ball levels as a 19-year-old catcher. So
yeah, I think so. So I think when you barrel the ball up at the rate that he does, and he absolutely does, but I think when you hit the ball that hard consistently, I think it is an aggressiveness issue more so than a pitch recognition issue.
Right,
so
we don't, it's like just, what? I didn't have the reports to sustain him as a top 101 catcher out of A ball, right? Like I had the Edgar Cuero reports, and we saw Jefferson Cuero live this year. And by we, I mean, I think it was literally Ben again, because he is a person that sees the Carolina team. So
yeah.
He was like, yeah, he's a good prospect, but not like, you know, slow your roll, basically.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't know what it is with Brewers prospects that are, you know, young teenagers from Latin America. They seem to have this, like, certain buzz about them that every single one of them is going to be a star. I don't know if it's just how Brewers Twitter manifests itself.
This Brewers Twitter a thing that exists? I don't know.
You know, you'd be surprised, Jeffrey.
Every Twitter
I did not
is
know
a thing that
exists. I did
exists,
not
yeah.
know that Nationals Twitter was a thing. I didn't even know they had real fans. But I found out that it
Jared
is.
Jared is well aware of that at this point, yes.
Oh God. Number eight, Bryce Tarang. He's one of the few guys on this list. In fact, is he the only one that made the major leagues? No, it was Garrett Mitchell. My apologies, but so he's the second one on this list that's actually made the major leagues. So, or no, he hasn't made the major. What am I saying? My goodness. But I just think of him as basically a major leaguer at this point. I think is my sure. confusion because I think he's proven
we're like 25
lists
in now. It's fine.
I know, and I mean, I think he proved everything that he needs to prove in AAA at this point. Like I thought that he was going to get a promotion.
Yeah, so not as bad as me not knowing who Jonathan Aranda is, apparently. But
yeah, we're gonna replay that Shaq. Sorry, I was unfamiliar with your game meme when Aranda hits like three homers against the Yankees in May.
Yeah, buddy, don't ask me anything for the next 2 months about anyone I did not rank on this on these lists. The 1,500 players I had to consider. Yeah,
Jeffrey, I think I was just manifesting Bryce Tarang to be off the prospect list at this point because it's been 5 years.
I would prefer that he was. And like, look, this is the kind of profile that probably overperforms his OFP, right? It's like the David Fletcher zone.
Yeah.
Where it's just like 280, 360, 380 and pretty good middle infield defense. And it's incredibly boring.
Yeah.
But it's like 3.2 wins above replacement by your wins above replacement of choice.
You know, the way that I think about it is like, what if Nick Madrigal was a shortstop?
You can go in that direction. You can have that conversation with Jared if you want.
Oh, I'd
love
to. Not
a person wants to do that. As I point out in his variants for this list, this is the first year that his slugging percentage has started with a four.
Yeah, that's something, right? Yeah. It's not nothing.
Yeah.
And
again, this is the, what is this? Is the, I think I just said it, what, the 280, 360, 380 profile? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely in the range of outcomes for him and
maybe I'm underrating this profile a little bit. I underrated
I
David Fletcher
are.
A little bit. So, yeah, it is.
Here's the thing with David Fletcher types, right? They're going to have
yeah.
1 year where they're going to make
right?
you regret where you rank them. And then the following year, they're going to remind you why you
ranked them
where.
Batting average on balls in
where.
Play will
exactly.
regress. And you hit. So here's the thing. If like he hits 260, it's kind of like.
That's a really empty 260.
It is, yeah.
So. You know, again, it's going to be the David Fletcher corollary where it's 1 year going to be questioning why we ranked him so low, and then the following year it's going to be a reminder of why you ranked him where you did. I don't dislike Bryce Tarang. I think he's a guaranteed
major
leaguer.
We ranked him
leader,
as the number one prospect in the system fairly recently,
which I think is a testament more so to the,
sure.
the depth that the farm system has accumulated more than anything, but. Yeah, no, I'm pretty certain that he's going to be in the major league fold now, especially that Colton Wong is no longer with the Brewers. Number nine. This is the guy. See, this Jeffrey,
fucking...
is my guy. I am putting my stamp
sure.
on Jacob Mizorowski, and I'll be damned if he comes out and is walking a batter per inning. I don't care. Well, I do care. But this is the kind of profile that, God, if it hits, if, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I know. I know, man.
And
you
we're getting,
tell
again,
me.
75th percentile.
Mm.
Oh, baby.
Still like 6 walks per 9 at 75th percentile, I'm pretty sure. But
just play along with me here because, like, we – how many guys have we talked about in years past that – like, is there a comp for Jacob Mizorowski is the question.
Like Steve Dalkowski? Like, not even that good of stuff as Steve Dalkowski probably. But I don't know, man. Like, I talk to amateur scouts about him, and they're, you would get a range of opinion from Nope, not for me. To this was one of the best arms in the draft, which I think maybe even people that said nope, not for me would admit that it was one of the best arms in the draft. I don't like. Look, I'm gonna tell you I watch video because I watch video. There's whatever two professional outings where you did not know where the ball was going. Sign me up for like an eighth inning guy at this point. I don't know, like, who have the Brewers really improved in this general milieu? I don't
Yeah.
know.
It's a fair point.
It's like a tough, like, there are actually people that would look at his TrackMan and say, this is the greatest TrackMan I've seen in the history of TrackMan. And I believe it. Don't get me wrong, but there are like lower bounds in terms of strike throwing. You give me all the stuff plus you want. I'm sure his stuff plus is great. But like
Oh yeah.
at a
The
certain
command
point,
plus is probably
you gotta be, so you gotta at least be around the zone to get chases, right? Which is the whole idea.
right.
I don't know. Again, talk to me in the air. This was a throw a dart for me. You could have him two in this system, three in this system, three in this system, probably. You could have him not on this list.
Jeffrey, here's going to be my bold prediction.
All right.
And this is the bold prediction of bold predictions. Jacob Mizorowski is a top 50 prospect in Major League Baseball this
Wait,
time
wait, and
next
like,
year.
what's the difference between Nick Nastrini this time next year? I don't know. We'll find out together.
Yeah, we will. We will. We'll be finding out together. That I am so in, and I'm ready to be hurt by Jacob
Sure.
Mizorowski.
Go for it.
And yeah, let's do it. Ethan
I do like
Small.
that I said, like, before we get on,
Yeah, go ahead.
I got this was probably 5 years ago now. Maybe six. My favorite scout quote I've ever gotten is just like, let him be someone else's project.
I remember
And
you
that's for
I've
me if I'm
seen
not yet.
that. Yeah. I remember
I
seeing
would
that in the
just prefer,
variance
like,
part.
yeah,
Yeah.
if I were the, I guess not if I were the Brewers because they drafted him, but if I were any other team, I would say, let him be someone else's project. Look, if they get a late inning reliever or mid rotation starter out of him, God bless, right? The stuff's there. It's stupid.
And they took him in the second round. Like, that's the
And
kind
they
of guy
paid
that
him
you
too.
want to
They
take.
paid him, yeah.
Yeah,
That's
I mean
fine.
that's
Yeah.
the kind of variance that you want to take in the second round,
Sure.
personally. Like, if you want to go safer in the first round, that's fine. I understand the logic, but the second and third round, when you've got these tantalizing talents, the Mizorowskis of the world, like, I think that's the time to
No, I
pounce.
don't think it's
And
a bad pick, but it's just
I
again,
know. I
let it
yeah, no,
be,
I
for me
understand.
personally, let it be someone else's
Now listen,
project.
if he was in the Nationals farm system, and God bless if I get in trouble for that one, but like,
You still got to do that podcast, and you're not going to be the one
damn
that's getting
it.
gets in trouble for it, so don't worry about
That's
it.
true. That's true. I get to pin it all on Jared, but like, it is the Brewers farm system, and I feel like they have gotten pretty good development out of their pitchers, more so than their hitters, right? Like, if you had to really segment
Yeah,
their
again, we
development
go back to
process.
Burns and Woodruff and, Ashby to an extent too, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna make a little bit of a bet here just on the talent
You
and
might
on
be
the
right.
organization. So
I'm sure they're making that bet too, so.
yeah. So Ethan Small, I think we can safely assume is not going to be of the variance that Jacob Mizorowski is, either for better or worse. But he is a major leaguer at this point, right? He's actually the only pitcher on this list that's made the major league. So, look, he kind of feels like he doesn't really feel like a starter at this point, right? Because he's
Yeah,
got some
he's got that
command
high arm
issues.
slot fastball that they like.
Yeah.
I mean that not just them, but a lot of people like. And just hasn't like
It's
come
just the
together.
command
The
is
command
really the
hasn't come together
problem.
to the
Yeah.
level
Yeah.
where you can kind of get him to a starting pitcher in the way they've kind of got around like the Freddy Peralta types. Like he hasn't quite gotten there yet. It's fine. But again, he's kind of a low variance back end starter, multi-inning reliever guy. So, yeah.
He kind of feels like a guy that is going to be traded for
Something. I mean, he could be like a fastball changeup reliever out of their pen too. Or something like those guys. But
and he's a lefty, so I mean, that's always gonna carry something. Yeah. So, yeah, I think he's an interesting guy, but I think that does kind of signify where the farm system starts to fall off, right? I think at number 10, it really does start to fall off a cliff, for lack of better words. But there are some interesting guys on you know, outside the top 10 here. Who's the one guy that really caught your eye, Jeffrey?
So I'll go with Carlos Rodriguez, the pitcher. I have been a fan of Carlos Rodriguez, the outfielder, in this system as well. He got hurt this year. It's an interesting arsenal for an, again, we went through the top 10 list and didn't get to a pitcher until we got to 9. Yep. It's an interesting pitching arsenal to me. It's a good fastball, a 4-pitch mix. The breakers aren't always where you want them to be at this point. Like, he can snap off the slider a little bit, not really get on top of it, but I do feel like he might be a guy that, like, can take a little jump in the upper minors and get to, like, a, you know, a 60 fastball, 55 breaker, you know, a couple average secondaries beyond that, maybe be, like, the mid to back end starter they don't really have in the system presently.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, because, like, we've talked about that, you know, the Brewers' depth in the upper minors does not really compare to that of the Cardinals. And if you're going to try to establish some guys that make up for an injured Aaron Ashby who's already injured, or let's say, God forbid, Brandon Woodruff or Corbin Burns get hurt for a week or two. Like, or
Corbin,
you know,
Burns gets traded in June because
he's in arbitration.
Yeah, he went to, he tried to arbitrage his Arb 2 season for $700,000.
At that point, I think Carlos Rodriguez will be.
And I don't. I don't do 11. Robert Gasser, like, is legitimately a pretty good pitching prospect as well. So,
yeah,
he's really not that far off. Small and Mizrowski.
I was gonna say, like, he could,
not as close to the majors as Small, but certainly closer than Mizrowski.
Yeah, he's in AAA, and I think you can make the case that, you know, it's between him and Small for the number 10. We just gave Small the edge because he made the major leagues, and you know, I think being the lefty probably is the also the benefit there. But Jeffrey, that will do it for the Brewers podcast. Thank you once again for hopping on, and thank you all for listening to another episode of the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. We'll see you guys next time.